Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Hoppa! We are live, Richard.
Hello there. How are you? Where business buying banter meets no BS reality.
That's
okay,
right.
Here we go. How you doing?
Great. I get excited for Thursdays, and I get the whole week, so to speak, to think about our next episode and what the topic is going to be. So I try to rack my brain around the past to come up with some good stories, because stories are good.
Stories are good, but boy, do weeks fly by. I don't know about you. It's like, it seems like an hour goes by and it's Thursday again, which is wonderful because we have a great time, but holy smokes, it goes fast.
Yeah. I'm glad we do it on a Thursday because it kind of wraps up the week heading into Friday. Got to have fun on Thursdays because why not every day?
Got to have fun Monday to Friday, Monday to Sunday.
Every day is a fun day when it's in entrepreneurship through acquisition, whether you're selling or buying. Every day is a fun day.
Sunday fun days.
So today's topic, ladies and gentlemen who are joining us, and if you're joining us, if you can, please put in a comment in the comment section where you're joining us from, whether it's our YouTube channel, searchfunder.com. We are posting this show live simultaneously on searchfunder.com. LinkedIn, if you're watching us from LinkedIn, give us a shout out in the comments and tell us where you're watching the show live from, because we like to keep track, because data is important, right, Richard?
Yes, or data is also important.
data.
You know, I was with a group and they kept calling data and I kept saying data. They kept calling data and I kept saying data. And it's a very Canadian thing to say data. And I say data. So you're in Wisconsin, which is close to Canada. So you're saying data. So yes, but either case, the data holds the answers, always does.
That's right. Is it tomato or tomato?
It's both. Although tomato, I was doing a YouTube short, Instagram short. And I showed it to my son, Jake, 21 years old, and it went a little long. And he said, "Dad, people have the attention span of a tomato."
Said, right?
Don't go over a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
So, or a tomato.
One more. Wheelbarrow or wheelbarrow?
Wheelbarrow.
My husband calls it a wheelbarrow, and it drives me nuts.
When you borrow it from somebody.
Where'd you get wheelbarrow from?
Because he probably borrowed it from the neighbor and didn't give it back.
There you go. There you go. All right. Enough of the shenanigans, but we'll get to more shenanigans later. So,
God all right. Yes.
Let's talk about the personal financial statement, the SBA version, perhaps. Boy. That form is very important, and every business buyer needs to take it seriously, along with your consultant, your lender. You want to make sure everything that the statement is asking for is true and accurate. And over the years, my experience is it's a pain in the dupa to fill out the personal financial statement. By golly, what do you think, Richard?
The ones that are required by lenders are infinitely more comprehensive than the ones that a prospective buyer has to submit to a broker or a seller. And there's good reason for that, because if it's being submitted to the broker, of course, above all, it's got to be accurate and true. But the one, they don't need to go into the details of what can be leveraged, or get into real granular details about the financial statement. It's high level, but it's got to be accurate. Versus with a lender, they want to know the details. Mm-hmm. And so, I see it mostly from another side, which is a critically important document. And we'll talk about that perspective in a minute. It's a critically important document. And people need to understand, I think, a couple things. Maybe you could talk to this, that a financial statement, there could be more there than an applicant actually submits. And I know you do a lot of that type of work. So I think it would be important for people to understand how, when you get one, how you work on it with a buyer, because it may be better than they're showing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm happy to weigh in on certain things that a buyer needs to present to a broker and seller, because oftentimes I hear buyers saying, I'm not sending them my financial statement, which is sort of bizarre because they're happy to send it to a lender. And there's a whole different take on that related to a seller. So when you get a personal financial statement, some of the things that you find, or where, what do you look for? Where can you beef it up accurately, of course?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I have potential buyers fill out the SBA personal financial statement, once we know that you're qualified and we're going to move to searching, yes, the business broker profile mini financial statement is just that, mini. It's just talking about really liquid cash, maybe assets, equity, and home. The overall SBA one is really diving into all of the details. And it is my job to have conversation with the proposed buyer, walking through that statement from top to bottom. And if your SBA lender is not, there will be things that perhaps are found that were in the closet and we didn't bring it up, or we may miss opportunity to find another eligible source of down payment to get your transaction done. So let's start with just the simple stuff, Richard. You know, when you're looking at the personal financial statement, you want to list all of your personal deposits, right? Your checking, yep. Your savings. You want to list stocks, bonds. There's sections about your vehicles. And then, you know, there's the asset section, and then there's a liability section. And the liability section is equally as important with accurate balances as to what is owed on some of those assets, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you need the net value, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And go ahead.
So what I have found, it's a crazy couple of crazy incidents over the years, which seem to be pretty common. I mean, we get it from buyers. One of the things is, and again, I'm not talking about bank applications. It's just to the broker, the seller. And I've had several comments where they say, well, I'm not going to give them my financial statement. And the rationale that we try to provide back to them is, hey, you know, you've signed this NDA, which is all wonderful. You're requesting the seller disclose everything about their business, their financial statements, tax returns, details, answer all your questions. They're entitled to know your financial statement to make sure you can get to the finish line. And so any buyers who are apprehensive, now that, of course, a situation where someone doesn't have a robust financial statement, they're concerned about that, and we can talk to that. But there has to be a willingness to provide and exchange information with the other side. I mean, you're not going to get, if you're expecting the seller to keep providing information, and that is a reasonable request by the seller and or their intermediary for your information, you have to provide it.
That's right. That's right. And on the personal financial statement, when I review it with buyers, there's a section for real estate. And I don't know why, but quite often, I don't know if it's intentional or just forgotten about, or they don't want to tell the lender, they don't want to list all the real estate that they own, including their primary residence.
Yeah, because they don't want to collateralize it, but they're going to find out.
Yes. So stop the baloney and be transparent out of the gates with your consultant to discuss all of these avenues before we present it to the lender. Because I know you don't want to use the equity that's in your home. However, the SBA does allow you to pull the equity out of your home if you want to use it toward the equity injection required by the bank for the down payment on the loan project, okay? And that needs to be discussed ahead of time. Like, how are we going to get there? Is it going to meet SOP guidelines? Let's talk about it. Now, not all the time will that be the case, because some transactions are larger and they may require the bank wants to take a subordinate lien on that available equity, right? So we have to kind of talk about it. And if there's ever a question, which way do we go? I'm going to contact my portal of top performing lenders to say, hey, this is the transaction we have. Richard has this much cash on hand, but
not enough.
But you're funny. But he also has equity in his home. We're thinking, you know, maybe pull some of the equity out of the home because he has secondary household income to cover the payment, even though that's a new SOP policy that went away, but banks still want secondary income. But what I'm trying to say is be transparent and open with it ahead of the gates, out of the gates, because I'm going to help figure out a way, how do we get that particular deal done on that specific business loan project?
Right. And there used to be a time where the SBA was required to go after collateral in the home, in primary residence, if there was more than 25% equity in the home. And I don't know if that still continues. But one of the things that used to do to overcome that, because I understand people's fear of putting up their house, because it's not just, you know, it's not just the one, you know, husband and wife partnership, whatever the case may be, two people own the home. You have to be in concert with one another to make sure you're both comfortable if it comes to that from a traditional lender. But when they used to have that 25% requirement, the way around it was you get a home equity line of credit that takes you below 25% equity. You take the money out, don't spend it, put it in your bank account. And then waived the requirement to collateralize the loan with your home because it was less than 25% equity. Mm-hmm. Irrespective of that, or how you can, if there is a workaround and things change, is understanding that there's personal guarantees associated with a third party lender that their buyers are going to have to put up. The degree will change, whether it's home, whatever it may be. But part of this personal financial statement and understanding when you are getting a third party loan is there's guarantees, there's collateral, there's security, and people have to get comfortable with that. Both parties, both party, husband, wife, partnership, whatever the case may be, because you both got to be on board and it could understand the trepidation. So, make sure it's something that you discuss with your spouse, partner, et cetera, because it's going to surface.
Listen, you're bringing it right on home for me, Richard, and I love it because I have a real story that I can share with our listeners. I spoke to a fella, this is probably over 5 years ago. He had a lot of equity in his home and he was married, and it was a transaction that I was very transparent upfront that, listen, in order to get this whale deal done, it was pushing $5 million, you have equity in your home and you have cash. Your best chance is going to be the cash is down, the post-closing liquidity is available, and they're going to take a subordinate lien on the equity in your home. You need to talk to your wife. He is married. He had a spouse. He tells me she says yes, that she's totally on board with the transaction.
Sorry to laugh. I know where this is going.
So I'm like, okay, but I learned a lesson here, Richard. I should have had her sign
of course
with him the SBA personal financial statement. Now, whether she signed it or not, those are some more stories that we could talk about in the future, but I didn't. I trusted him, and we'll get this personal financial statement signed as we're moving along. He signed it. She didn't yet. I didn't like that. I was a younger SBA lender, and sure enough, we get the deal approved. And as we're moving along, she don't want to pledge lean on the home.
Hello.
The deal went backwards. And he admitted he didn't tell me the truth out of the gates because he thought he had enough time.
He figured he could work her. I'm going to work the room. How did that work out for you? Right.
Oh, geez.
I had something similar where I was looking to acquire, I was acquiring a business and asked if there's any other partners involved with the business or anybody else. Partner said, one said yes. I've had it both ways where I didn't ask the question early on in my career and went way down the road and then found out there was another partner involved in that and did the whole deal. Learned well from that experience, but subsequent to that, had also had a situation where they said there's a partner involved in the deal and there's no problem. There's silent partner. I can sign for everything, et cetera, et cetera. We have get into, and having had this experience, had a couple of these conversations. I said, are they well aware that you would do? Oh, absolutely. And then I only allowed it to go to one or two other conversations and finally said to him, we need to get this other person involved in the conversations. And it was, oh, no problem. I've got the mandate to sell the business. I said, okay, for just my own comfort. And I presented them with a letter, just, you know, it's a resolution letter just saying that they mandated and they can represent them and sell the assets of the business in their name, et cetera. And couldn't get it signed.
Oh, man.
But ultimately said, well, don't tell me that you have the proxy to do this when you don't. And subsequently learned that he had felt that once there was an accepted deal in place, the other partner would be convinced to sell the business. Well, that's wonderful that that's your thought process, but don't waste people's time in the interim, much like yours got wasted. So, you know, ultimately transparency at every level with all the stakeholders, whatever's involved is the easiest way. And you know what, if there's a problem, tell people. Because if at least you could deal with the problem when you know what the problem is. But if you don't know what the problem is, you can't deal with it. So
boom,
like
boom.
Hands above the table.
Listen, in SBA lending, when it comes to change of ownership transactions, we fully anticipate curveballs. They are coming.
Oh, absolutely.
So just shoot them. Shoot them, baby.
Shoot them. Yeah, shoot them at the beginning. You might as well know early on. Also had on the other side, and again, I speak more from a standpoint of buyer to seller, buyer to broker with these personal financial statements. I've had it quite often where a buyer will say, well, I don't want him to know exactly what I have because that's going to influence their thinking related to the deal terms and purchase price. And this is coming from people who have pretty substantial assets. Mm-hmm. And the point has to be made to them that their thinking is flawed. Because the more financially sound you are, the better position you are in the eyes of a broker and a seller to complete a transaction. Just because you're worth X doesn't mean the price of the business is going up. You pay what you deem to be the value of the business. That mm-hmm. should never influence. Now, if the seller and the broker, if that influences their thinking, that's their problem. But a buyer should never think that they're showing too much. I mean, if anything, that really, really bolsters your cause because the sell side knows this individual can get the deal done. They have the capital. Mm-hmm. Or they have the financial strength to be able to leverage that capital. So never be afraid to show a very, very strong financial statement. In fact, the stronger, the better, irrespective of whether it's an SBA loan, a third party loan, you know, commercial loan or a balance of sale seller financing. You want to put yourself in a good position.
Yes. And include it all. I have another story of a fella a couple of years ago, he and his partner, they had to put up their home for this business acquisition, had it on the personal financial statement, reviewed everything. Banks do searches, right? They're going to do searches. So yes, if indeed. You miss something on that personal financial statement, whether you're a buyer or you're the seller, the bank is going to find it for good reason.
Of course.
Well, we're getting ready to clear closing conditions. We're moving on. We're getting ready to put the subordinate lien on the home, taking a look at title insurance. Well, there's a parcel next door to the primary residence, a piece of land that the proposed buyer also owns, but did not put on the personal financial statement. Guess what? We had to take a lien on the land because it's known as real estate and it had equity. It was free and clear. He wasn't happy, but
can't make everybody happy.
He didn't disclose it. So at the end of the day, though, we got through it and he had to pledge it. It is what it is.
You know, one of my first bosses, a guy named Saul Zuckerman, who's a great guy. He's a wonderful guy. He's been a friend of mine all these years, a little older now. Terrific guy, very, very comical. And we were talking not long ago related to internet, social media, all these things. And he comes and he's about 20 something years older than I am. So just different generation when he grew up, but he said it best in his like street smart way, as far as all these documents and anything related to a deal and anything you do in business, said, you can't get away with nothing. and didn't mean it in a larcenous way. It's just, you got to operate transparently because the information is available to anyone. So you're not going to hide land. You're not going to hide another property. Everything is coming to the surface. And you know, those type of things we're talking about in the way of a loan or financial statements, but that bleeds into this whole business buying process and the interaction between buyers and sellers and buyers and sellers and brokers and lenders, all the stakeholders is, you know, you've got to be upfront with everything. And if there's surprises, regardless of what those are, surprises with the financials, surprises with licensing, surprises with an employee or customer concentration, everything is going to come to the surface. And if you don't disclose it, if sometimes there's an oversight, but if you don't disclose something which is material and obvious and the other side knows, these guys know about it, they should have disclosed this, you lose all credibility.
Right. So let's talk about the liability section of the personal financial statement. Debt. And this is really important for anyone out there that's thinking of buying a business. And many of us have debt. We have a mortgage or what have you. Pull out your most recent statements and disclose on your personal financial statement what are those monthly payments and be accurate as possible. Because the bank underwriter has to do what is called a global cash flow of the overall picture, meaning not just the standalone business that you're acquiring debt service coverage, but the global. What's the business debt service coverage and what is your personal household debt service coverage? Combine the two and you've got global. If you're going to miss payments by one digit, and I've seen this on personal financial statements where they say this is their mortgage payment and they forgot one extra digit in there, we're going to have issues.
Yeah, so, especially if it's the first digit.
Oh my goodness. But it does happen. And I, as a consultant, have to take ownership, Richard, of reviewing that statement top to bottom with my clients, the business buyers, because we're human. We make mistakes. It's a pain in the doobot filling out that personal financial statement. Listen, I used to work for banks past and I was a commercial loan portfolio manager, and we had to collect a updated personal financial statement every year, first quarter. It had to be in by January 31st. More business owners were ticked off. I got to fill out this personal financial statement again. And you know what some of the lenders would do? I saw it. They would take the old one, make a copy of it, white out the signature and tell them to sign and date it again.
With liquid paper.
With the same information. Yeah. I'm like, people, did your debt go down? Did your debt go up? Oh no, that's what they would do. So transparency, please, people.
Yeah, and the reality is, I mean, you, of course people make mistakes, but everybody knows how much the mortgage payment is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what your costs are. And so just do it in the right way. It keeps being attached to this whole concept of transparency through the process with all the parties. You establish credibility by being upfront, buyer, seller, lender, broker, accountant, attorney, whoever's involved, just being upfront, because any issues you could deal with the issues when they know what they are. And everything surfaces. There's anything that's hidden is going to come up. And the longer into the process that it takes for something to surface, the more impactful it is in a negative way related to the whole deal. And so, you know, on the personal financial statement, you know, we have a lot of people from, you know, Platform Search Funder that are listening on the shows. And, you know, I read hundreds of comments on Search Funder, and there are some funded searchers, there are some advisor and intermediary, but the vast number of people on those type of platforms, if people have never done this before, no knowledge, no expertise, they're going into business, they're looking for capital afterwards, often too late. We could talk about that in a separate show. But for them, especially if they have no experience buying businesses and they're just, you know, they're graduate school individuals, they may have good pedigree, but there's no operational experience or no track record. Imagine when you sit in front of a seller, they're already behind the eight ball because sellers know that they don't even have the acumen potentially to operate the business, or at least haven't demonstrative operational experience. So in those cases, especially, you got to be straight up front and let them know what's happening and what your financial statement looks like. It's no use hiding it. It's going to surface. So
it's going to surface. Wait,
save yourself a whole hell of a lot of time.
Yes.
And provide, you know, accurate information.
You know it. One more story before we get to Q&A. Back to the asset side of the personal financial statement. True story. I love good stories, Richard. So buyers will list what their personal savings, balances, their checking, money markets, you know, all the IRAs. Right. You want to list all your balances. A good rule of thumb, even though a buyer said that's what's in their account, you might want to verify it out of the gates. That's called fully vetting, because I can easily say I have this much money on a personal financial statement. And if you ask me for a bank statement, it's going to tell you a different story. True story. This wasn't my deal. It was a peer of mine at a loan shop that I used to work for. And it hit like wildfire, like, watch out, ladies and gentlemen, because here's another new trend we got to watch out for. The buyer listed on the personal financial statement that she had so much money in cash liquidity, meaning savings. You can pull it out at any time. I want to say, I think it was $80,000 she put in there as part of her down payment for this loan project. So the deal got submitted. The front end lender's like, we got a deal. They got enough cash liquidity. Underwriting approved it. Got the commitment letter, closing, moving to clear all the closing conditions. And the closer asks for the bank statements to prove the $80,000 cash liquidity. And the borrower's like, well, I don't have that. And she said, well, you listed on your personal financial statement, you've got $80,000 cash. Where is it? It's in my freezer.
Perfect. What's your address?
Who's the dupa? Come on. Now, listen, that does happen, though. Way back in the day, I used to work with seniors doing reverse mortgages, and they store money in the freezer.
You know why?
You tell me why.
They like cold cash.
Stop it. Ba-boom. That was a good one. I liked it.
You walked right into it.
Yeah. So anyhow, guess what? That deal didn't close on time. She was instructed, please move your cash in the freezer to the local bank and
deposit it. Now you could do a Zoom call and she could just count it out right on the table.
That's how we verify the cash.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot. You know, when I used to work with my father in the renovation business, and I think of how many times years ago as a kid, how many times we went to, you know, did a significant job at someone's house and you went in, they said, give me 5 minutes. And they're big. They were at that point, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 jobs. And they said, you know, we went in there expecting to get a check from the bank and you'd come out and they would count off cash and it was cold.
I bet. It was cold.
Yeah, it was cold. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. Well, them were the days.
Well, you know, people do put cash, they say, under their mattresses and stuff. So as a consultant, I have to ask, if you say you've got this much cash, show me your statements.
Show me the money.
Show me the money. And if it's not in the account, where is it?
Yeah. Get it in the account. Well, at least she had it. Right. Yeah. So it wasn't like, well, I had it when I wrote the statement. I don't have it anymore. So
it wasn't collecting interest. It was collecting freezer burn is what it was collecting.
It's exactly what it's collecting.
Oh, I think it's Q&A time.
Woo-hoo, okay, put on my glasses to take a look at this. Okay.
And thank you, everyone that is listening from Search Funder, YouTube, LinkedIn, wherever you're from. Please do Richard and I a huge favor, because our channel is new, Business Buying Banter on YouTube. So hit that subscribe button, like, make a comment under the episode. We love your feedback. And the more we get support, the more that our show gets pushed out to the Uncle Al, known as Algorithm. Okay?
Algorithm, so, yes.
Algorithm.
I was thinking when you said Uncle Al, I was thinking about, I just read the biography of Al Capone, which, by the way, was Lawrence Berggren who wrote it, 600 and something pages. Wow. Hate to digress, but I would urge everybody to read it. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Talks about, you know, Chicago in the old days, Big Al, and discrimination against the Italian community, which was unbelievable and unbearable, and the corruption in Chicago politics. So I hate to digress, but when you said Big Al, because they used to call him Big Al or the Big Fellow, that's what I thought.
There
about.
You go.
Now back to business. Here we go.
Well, it looks like Miss Jody Lamb has a question for
Yay,
us.
Yay, Jody.
How long can that process be, more or less?
Only an eternity. It just feels like an eternity.
So the process, what would you think she's meaning, the process?
I think from the time you submit a personal financial statement or a business approved, like how long is it to go through the whole process with an SBA loan? We'll assume that, you know, from beginning to end, because that's a, you know, pretty common inquiry or
I'll provide two answers here. Number one, an SBA personal financial statement cannot be older than 90 days old when presented to the SBA underwriter. So sometimes deals, ladies and gentlemen, get stuck in the queue for whatever reason. We don't have enough information from the seller side. They weren't prepared, or the buyer side. And that personal financial statement starts to collect dust.
Right.
And after 90 days, that's going to be handed right back at you to update the balances, update, you know, your payments, sign and date. That's an SBA policy. So that will answer the process for that document. But as far as an SBA loan from start to funding, that can be up and down and all around and left and right and wherever the heck it may go. I can share with you this. I have funded deals where there were very organized sellers and buyers. And Richard, you know what organized means, where we can get the transaction done and funded within 30 to 45 days. On the other hand, lack of organization and a lot of back and forth of retrieving stuff. Good Lord, I've seen 6 months.
Oh, absolutely. And what I tell people is similar to that is, if you get everything in on time and making the assumption that you progress, because there's two parallel tracks here. There's the SBA doing the funding and the underwriting, the SBA, the lender rather, and there's also the buyer and seller negotiating, getting their act together and their deal together. But assuming you get, you know, you work along a good track with the seller, getting that organized, and you provide everything to the underwriter, to the lender, in a timely manner, you have to think about this as being 60 to 75 days. Mm-hmm. That's what I've always said, at the very least. If you don't, if you do that, it'll be on the lower part. If you don't, it's anybody's guess when this thing is closing. So my experience is the lenders, I mean, sometimes they're a pain in the ass, but the lenders don't hesitate. They want to get the money either loaned out or the application declined. So they will work as quick, generally, as the information that's provided to them. Buyers and sellers and brokers also need to understand that the first set of documents required are not the last set of documents required, because as an underwriter learns more about the business and certain things, for example, something comes up that may be environmentally related, or there's some intellectual property that has a value there that is being acquired, they can request additional information. And there's also business appraisal. If there's property involved, there's property appraisals. So you've got to work quickly, get the information. And you know, one of these things, it's a huge advantage for the buyer as well, because it forces the seller to provide information that typically the buyer needs as well. Mm-hmm. And when there's no third-party lender, sometimes they're dragging their feet. Whereas in this case, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Seller, you want to get this thing done, you got to provide this information. Similarly, what a lender requests of a buyer has to be provided expeditiously. Don't waste time, because it's just going to add time to the end of how quickly you can get it closed.
Man, if underwriters are listening right now, they're clicking that like button to this episode just based on what you said, Richard.
Click the love button.
The love button.
The love button.
And if your down payment is in the freezer, your loan is going to take a hell of a lot longer, because that's got to get in the bank, you know, in season.
So in that question, by the way, if someone puts it into the bank, their statements have to show it's been in the bank for a certain period of time, like a mortgage?
Yes, but it's not necessarily an SBA policy anymore that it has to be seasoned 60 days, but the banks with regulations want it proven that it's seasoned 60 days because of money laundering. So there's been talk that the SOP doesn't require that seasoning, but the banks do.
And the banks make the SBA has the guidelines, but the banks make the rules.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Got it. What other delicious questions do we have here?
If something gets missed, Richard, does that look bad on you as a rep? Not necessarily, because let's be real, Raquel, that things can get missed. But if it's repetitive, the underwriters are going to start to question the character of the buyer, or the character of the seller, or the character of the broker. Okay. If stuff starts popping up missed, I'll tell you what, I'm not liking it. I call it flags up the pole. And once I see too many of them, I'm starting to want to head in a different direction. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You just, sometimes people make honest mistakes to forget something, but if it's habitual, you just lose credibility. That's what happens in all aspects of the deal. Conversations between buyer and seller, furnishing information to lenders. Absolutely. And certainly when someone gets in the middle and, when someone's in the middle, such as yourself providing guidance, it happens too many times. You start looking at everything with one eye closed. So you get very concerned. So I agree wholeheartedly. I just see a question here, by the way. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. But in all fairness, for those of you listening, if you're working with a rookie SBA lender that doesn't know what questions to ask and the deal gets just freaking pitch slapped into the underwriting queue, and now the underwriter is asking for this and asking for that because the front end lender didn't ask for this or that. That's not on the borrower, so to speak.
No, of course not. And that's why you have to, having the right parties and stakeholders involved and advisors is so important, because people like you, you'll catch that. And it's precisely. And people make mistakes. It happens all the times. It's not intentional. So that's why you getting a second set of eyes on everything is wonderful.
I mean, look at us. We couldn't find our link last week for the show, and I still couldn't find this week's link.
The second we get off the phone, I can't find my keys for today. Absolutely. And I hear from Jamar. I saw something from Jamar. Someone said, I can't remember. Jamar said, most buyers have not. So many buyers have never done this. Great topic. That's from Jamar.
Hey, Jamar. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us and adding feedback. But yeah, go ahead, Richard. I jumped on you by
accident. No. It's fine. Jump. go right ahead. You know Mr. Jamar. It's a great looking picture of him. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, but you should follow him on LinkedIn. He's in this industry and really has some good posts that he put up. So he's right. Many buyers have not done this. And you know what, Jamar? Many SBA lenders haven't done a lot of these transactions either. It's like the blind leading the blind, which is going to end up being a DUPA show.
DUPA. Yes.
God bless America. We can do better. We can do better. But thank you, Jamar. Thank you, Jamar.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Very
valid.
Let's
talk about our seller side list. Let's put up that scanner. QR code. I'm old school. There it is. Richard.
Oh, the special report. Yes. For anybody who's thinking about buying a business, even the inkling of buying a business, it's a report I put together and Deb as a significant contribution to the financing side. And this, it's really robust. It jumps into a bunch of areas where sellers are not going to be upfront. They're not hiding stuff. They're not being, they're not cooking the books. They're not being fraudulent. They're just going to avoid or not disclose certain subjects related to acquiring a business, for example, related to deal terms, potentially related to any client, employee, supplier issues. And they're not required, unless it's material, to disclose this. This is incumbent upon the buyer. And so this report, it's a great read, if I do say so myself. It'll be very helpful for them to just open up your eyes to some of the things that you absolutely need to look out for, because that information may not be presented readily. And unless you ask the questions, you're not going to know the answer. So I urge anybody to read it. It's about 40 pages, but it goes into good detail about scenarios of these. So scan the QR code. We got great comments back and regarding the report. Yes. So I'm going to work on another one in the next quarter. Not sure yet the subject, but we'll have that available.
I'm a firm believer that knowledge is power, but where you obtain the knowledge determines what that power is.
Amen to that. Yes. Good knowledge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good knowledge. So we have to be careful, ladies and gentlemen, because there is a lot of talk out there of do it this way, do it that way. No, that's policy. No, that is policy. Get to the people that know what they're doing.
Yes.
Because Google tells you this is how you should do it doesn't mean it's right.
I just had this as a post on one of the communities of business buyers, mm-hmm. and was trying to explain to them that you need to seek out believable parties. If you're sitting in the auto repair shop, getting two people are sitting there getting their car fixed, turning to the person to the left of you and having them tell you what's wrong with your car and how the transmission needs to be fixed is of no value. It's find out from the mechanic. Right. And so you want to speak to believable parties in this whole process. And, you know, people's intention may be good, but you said earlier, the blind leading the blind. So in this whole process, get your act together and deal with believable parties. People who've been there, done that, have had a good measure of success in the process and experience and a track record. That's a believable party. And that's who you want. That's who you want to deal with, whether it be, advisor, SBA consultant, accountant, attorney, etc. Deal with believable parties. Spend the money because it's usually negligible compared to the value of the information that you're going to get and the cost that you will incur getting bad information from the wrong people.
That's right. Solutions focus versus transactional. Like I just want to get this deal done so I can make some money. That doesn't make a business buyer feel good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No.
And it rarely works.
Yeah. But they're out there. There's very transactional focused lenders out there, in my opinion, quite frankly, that pass on deals that should get done, but they're not taking the time to dive into the personal financial statement, making sure it's complete by the borrower.
Right.
Because stuff gets missed.
Yeah. All the time.
Payment amounts are written down inaccurately, whether it was intentional or not intentional. Verify it. That global cash flow could kick the deal out the door, and maybe it was missed by one freaking digit. Hello, wake up, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure who you're working with knows what they're doing.
Amen to that. Perfect.
All right. Well, listen, I think that's going to wrap up the show. Would you agree?
Yes, indeed. Great show. Great information. I knew you would be the... A wealth of good information related to this subject matter. I'm looking forward to next week's show.
Yes.
And I think that's it. Before we're going to blink, and it'll be next Thursday.
I know.
And hope everybody will join us again, and thank everybody for participating and the good questions. And we love the feedback and appreciate everybody's support and the comments that come in during the course of the week. So thank you, everybody, for that. And thank you, Sia, in the background for, as usual, keeping us on time, organized, and all of that wonderful stuff. She's terrific.
And follow our YouTube channel, like it, subscribe, add a comment. Your support is actually helping support two business owners right here. So that's what it's all about. Let's support small businesses. And until next time, see you next Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, baby.
Bye, Deb.
Bye.